to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Prospect Park announces the season one finales of All My Children and One Life to Live. Tamar Braxton names her baby after Bold and the Beautiful's Brooke Logan. What are Sharon's plans for Nick on Y&R? Julian Jerome hits Port Charles, and Eileen Davidson announces her departure from Days of Our Lives. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Jamie Giddens, welcome.
Hey.
Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Luke, how do?
Jamie, last week we finished recording the podcast, figured it would be a nice relaxing evening, and we log off, and Eileen Davidson. The news that she's leaving Days of Our Lives, bro.
Right. And you know, the thing of it is about these shows, they work so much better in terms of inspiring righteous indigestion if it happens, you know, within that time frame that we do, you know, between the end of the soap week and the
yes,
news.
Please, soaps, please announce all departures on Fridays.
I'm serious,
it helps us.
Because I'm all too mellow when I need to bring back some of that. But really, there's nothing to be mad about because Eileen's decision was her own. So devastating, devastating news to Days of Our Lives. I mean, she has been killing it. I won't say since the beginning.
She broke out the teeth this last week.
Yeah, she, you know, we were a little critical when she first returned because they kind of stumbled with her re-intro. But from the moment she set her sights on bringing down Jarlena via their dim-witted / addicted stepson, Brady, well, Marlena's stepson, Johnson, it became delicious soap opera. And then her battles with Nicole and Sammy along the way, and even the stuff that she's doing now. I mean, now she and Marlena are facing off with fisticuffs again. And, you know, Kid Cordae broke the news to Soap Opera Digest that Eileen gave an exit interview to TV Guide where she basically intimated that the work schedule is just a beast over there at Days. I mean, the what's keeping the show on the air, the new production model where they crank out, you know, show after show after show after show 4 months in advance is, according to Eileen, it's pretty rough. And, you know, she's been front burner the whole year. So, you know, she says she needs a break to do with some family time and stuff like that. Of course, it caused all the speculation that she'll return as Ashley Abbott, and I just...
Listen, the moment I said that, saw that, I was like, no, I do not want Ashley Abbott to return to Genoa City in the terrible state it's in. Listen, if I was still living in Nebraska, I would have Time Warner Cable, and I would be thankful that I couldn't get CBS, because that's how bad YR is.
But YR the Bold and the Beautiful airs on...
I'm sorry. I could watch that with my Verizon internet connection and not be affected.
Well,
but listen, it is no great loss to lose YNR to a Time Warner Cable outlet.
That we're paid to watch these shows, so that can color our perception. Let me tell you right now, cutting for the Young and the Restless, even in its current state, which I'm not that big of a fan of what's going on right now, as noticed on my last meltdown on the last podcast, but I would never say
which
that
people
I'm,
seem to love.
I know, but I'm not. I think more, I will be honest, that was more about, you know, when you shake a bottle and you hold it down and shake it and shake it, and then it, I don't really think Y&R is terrible, but because I almost bit my tongue in half the past 6 months tried to give them time, when I finally unleashed, it was like, I can't take it anymore. But I don't think it's that bad where I'm wishing it off my TV. And
I'm not wishing it off for good, but I would not be disappointed in having a break.
Well,
from
let
it.
Me
that
let me speak
sure.
from the fans though, and I'm not talking about the core fans who log on to our site or who talk about soaps all day on Twitter. I'm talking about my friends and family who are just casual soap fans, but they're not casual about The Young and the Restless. And all these people who I had forgotten, I mean, Young and the Restless is huge in black households. It always has been. It probably always will be. And you know, a lot of that had to do with, you know, the Neil, Drew, Malcolm, Mamie, Olivia years, but even before that, YNR has been huge in black households.
Catherine Chancellor,
yes,
maybe.
People love Kay Chancellor and love to hate Jill. And I kid you not, on my Facebook page, all these people who, you know, have added me from back home that really might write me every Merry Christmas or Happy Birthday, Jamie. I got more. They were like, oh, Jamie know what's going on with The Young and the Restless. And I got more people going, how can I watch The Young and the Restless? And I'm telling people wrong. I'm like, well, you could go online. They're like, nah, they won't even let us. I'm like, whoa, you mean to tell me Time Warner Cable to block
CBS blocked their website from being accessible.
I mean, this is the wild, wild west. This is some gangster
stuff.
They
got dropped, and CBS was like, bitch, y'all ain't gonna watch us on Time Warner Internet.
Listen, what I'm gonna be interested to see, and we're gonna get to this more after we finish Days of Our Lives, but what I'm gonna be interested to see is how this affects the ratings on the CBS soaps, because General Hospital will end up the number one soap.
I don't think it'll be that serious, but
it's all the major metropolitans. It's like New York City, Dallas. I mean, the really big cities where you would think that there'd be a lot of viewers.
Could be, but you know, they'll write it off. I mean, by chance, for the first time since 1988, another soap beat YNR, you know CBS Daytime will be screaming to the rooftops that doesn't count because of this Time Warner situation, which I don't think it'll happen. I mean, YNR has a million lead on the next soap, and that next soap is also a CBS soap, The Bone of the Beauty. I don't think, you know, if GH had Brenda, Luke and Laura wedding, Sonny and Brenda screwing, and Casey the Alien back hauling at the same time, maybe
they might be able to do it.
And
well, let's
have to put that devil back in Marlena.
Let's pull this back a little bit. 2 days of our lives. Jillian, what are your thoughts on Eileen Davidson leaving?
When I saw it, I was laying down from doing the podcast, and then I see bloop, breaking news, Eileen Davidson out at Days. I was like, come again? I popped up like a Pop-Tart and was reading that, you know, and I'm just like,
in a toaster?
No,
in a fish fryer. What do you think a Pop-Tart pops out of?
Well, a box.
No, it doesn't. So, I done told you I'm solo with my jokes. But anyways, I was like, what the hell? I was not amused, as my boo Jordan Hudson would say. I was like, what is this? Because at first, you know, the first thing I said was, God damn it, Ken Corday, what you do? And then I saw she was like, the schedule. And I was like, oh, okay, my bad, Ken. Before I went buck on Ken on Twitter, I was like, my bad, Ken, my bad. And then I'm like, oh, she just need a break. And I'm like, well, give her a break. Shit. I'm like, give her a break. Let her take a break.
Yeah, off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. Now, that's a Talia. No.
Oh.
Ew. Or every Crystal Chappelle show, pretty much.
See?
It is, but it is true.
Back to Eileen.
Yeah, but back to Eileen, I'm like...
Except for when she bawled poor Peter.
Back to Eileen.
Yeah, I was like, come on, Ken, give her a break! I was like, get that girl a break! She been working it like a hole in the corner on that show. She brought life into that show. I'm sorry, she did. I'm hoping that it's a situation where she, you know, takes a little break and comes on back. You know, Jamie and I were discussing this offline, and Jamie was like, maybe she's over her guarantee. And I'm like, maybe they are trying to be nice and say, you know.
Because they've done that before. We don't know. We don't have any sources on that. But we do know that with the Sony soaps, you know, whenever – you know, so-and-so is going camping in the wilderness. We know that they over that guarantee, but no, yeah. I mean, but that was before when we discussed that was kind of before the interview. And I mean, it looked, you know, I think Eileen's a straight shooter. I mean, you know, she left the show once before because of burnout, but then they had her playing Kristen, Susan, Sister Mary, Mariah, Penelope Thomas. Yeah, well, you know, so that was after playing five characters. So you kind of, but you know, she's basically been playing Kristen. I mean, my God, there are so many days when Kristen is talking to herself. And, you know, that's hard work. I know, because I'm crazy. And, you know, you get exhausted having conversations with yourself and Jesus, like she be doing, yelling at Jesus and raping priests and, you know.
Well, and I'm a little bit concerned from a storyline perspective about who's going to be the bad person in Salem in terms of the ladies now, because Sammy has been like basically turned into a good girl who only occasionally shows her dark side.
Sammy used to be an apt description. Sammy just wrestled a cop in a park and then proceeded a few miles to shoot him. Yeah, I mean, she does bad things for good reasons, but Sammy is still most definitely not a good girl.
But we don't have a classic manipulator. I mean, when Kristen's gone, we won't have a classic manipulator.
Well, Roman, you know, little Jeannie Donovan. Now, of course, there's no comparison, but they are grooming her to be the next little, you know.
What did you think of her this week when Jennifer went to fire her?
I love how she pushes Jennifer's buttons. I mean, and they're not making the point on the show yet, but that's just how Eve Donovan used to push Jennifer.
She is rapping for her auntie. She's down with the fam.
Yeah, she's rapping for her sister, her big sister.
Her sister. My bad. Sister.
Yeah, her sister used to drive Jennifer to distraction. Now, I did see Jen Lilly has been doing her research. And I'm going to need her to stop because Jen...
Well, you know how good she is at people at their jobs.
Jen Lilly obviously knows the history of Eve Donovan, which I applaud any actor who learns their character's history. Because in an interview, I always like to credit the right publication. So forgive me, y'all, my magazine friends. It's either in Digest or in Depth. I don't know why. Like, some of them stand out to me. Some of the interviews stand out. And then some of them, I'm like, okay, which one did I read that in? But in one of the magazines, she gave an interview, and she was talking about Eve Donovan, her character's big sister. Mm-hmm. And she did a little wistful casting of her own. And I should ask her to please not do my job.
What she wanted?
She wants
Kelly Sullivan.
Oh my God. Okay.
Now, Kelly, quiet as it's kept, I used to say this back in the day. Kelly Sullivan's sensibilities might match up for days, but first of all, she's much too young. I mean, she threw Kelly under the bus because Kelly Sullivan don't look like she went to no high school with Melissa Reeves.
I don't know. Is she complimenting Missy, but then she throwing an old girl under the bus? Well, it's like, dang.
Kelly did just get through playing the mother of a grown-ass son. Wait a minute. This is in Digest. It's in Digest where she talks about, she says, Kelly is such a brilliant actress. She's kind of funny and very grounded. Plus, Sullivan bears a resemblance to Lily. So this is in Digest where they're... Well, it's kind of... Okay, I'm not going to throw Jen under the bus. It's kind of the Digest writer / Jen Lilly.
Regardless, Kelly Sullivan...
I'm not going to say it couldn't work because there have been so many people who didn't work on one soap in one role and then they did work...
I'll just leave it this way. Like you said... Let you do the wishful casting.
You know, and the people say we cut Luke off.
Sarah Buxton, though, they already used her on that show as a throwaway role. But, you know, who cares about that anymore? If Sarah Brown can come back as a new woman in General Hospital, well, anybody.
Tamara Braun.
No, we don't. Tamara done been there.
No, I'm saying Tamara Braun did it. You could do it with Sarah Buxton.
Oh, I thought you were meaning Tamara again. I'm like, no.
I was saying Days of Our Lives did it with Tamara Braun. They could do it.
Tamara Braun, but if she came back to Days, I would be like that man with a whack-a-mole. It's like, unless she go play one of the characters she's already played. Let me tell y'all, though, this is happening while we're doing this podcast. CBS Daytime Vice President Angelica McDaniel tweeted the song Come On Eileen to Eileen Davidson. George Guzman, the hairdresser at YNR, the hairstylist, is now doing Come On Eileen, Come On Eileen. They want her back. And I have to say, that is awesome. That is, forget how we feel about the state of the show for a moment. It is awesome. And think about how many years we've been doing this podcast and blog and how this genre is so hateful to women of a certain age. Now this woman at 54 years of age on God's earth has not one, but two soap operas and their fan bases begging for her. That is a testament because
ain't no game recognized.
It is a testament, but at the same time, they get her back, and if they play her as much as they're playing Melody Thomas Scott, we'll never see her.
Know that they have not just this regime, though. Let's take it back. The last several regimes, dating all the way back, Ashley hadn't been written correctly since Kay Alden got you on the door. So the last several regimes have royally fucked this character over. Let's just be real about it.
Well, but no, I get what he's saying. He's not saying that they're going to do that. He's saying
they'll
that
have a major guarantee, though.
I'm saying they will bring her back, and then we'll see her for about 3 weeks, and she'll disappear.
She'll be chilling.
Yeah, Mel costs way more than her. I'm just talking about right now the point. Yeah, I'm not happy with the storytelling for the vets on YNR either. But I'm just saying it is amazing in this genre that puts people out, that a few years ago put women out to pasture at 40, is clamoring with the – we would never have seen Barbara Bloom or Brian Franz ever begging an actor 54 years old to come back to their show. And I think that is amazing and a testament to Eileen Davidson.
And we certainly know that FOJ wouldn't either.
Why is she on the front burner? You know, that's how he is. Fraud's would have, like, you know, a friend of mine.
What's that old heifer doing on the front burner? Yikes.
A friend of mine who used to be an ABC insider, like, we sit and roll at how Fraud's would be watching GH and being like, why are Lucy and Laura and all these people on my TV at the same time? Basically, Fry's had an old person quota for the day, and he would have lost his, which is funny to me, because, you know, if you look at the social media message boards and stuff, GH fans are still mad that there aren't enough vets. And one day this last week, there was, in a scene, there was Tracy and Lucy and Scotty, cut to Luke and Holly, and I'm like,
and then Kevin was there too.
Like, do these GH fans watch the other soaps? Do they see Nikki and Victor coming out? Hello, everyone. We want you to raise some money for MS. Now y'all not gonna see us for 2 more weeks.
You got that? And then they goes.
You know, I mean, and even though definitely GH, you know, has their people off screen too, but they're in a story. They're doing something. Luke is on a mission. Laura's now on a mission after Luke. Yeah, they're off screen, but they're doing something. What is Nikki doing?
Or else they're in comas.
But yeah, back to Eileen. I'm happy that she is so wanted. If YNR was to bring her back, they need to write a kick-ass story for her. It's all about story. Don't even ask that woman to come back on your set unless you have a lot.
You know, Josh claimed when Eileen left and he came in, Josh claimed that he wanted to write for Eileen.
He also claimed that he was going to rehab Sharon.
Yeah.
Jamie, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of Chris?
He claimed he was going to rehab Sharon. He claimed that one of the first things he wanted to do was get Jill Abbott back. He claimed a lot of things. So,
exactly. Eileen probably is like, you know what, I'm going to chill for a minute because I know Ken wants me, so I'm going to stick it. You know, if Eileen, look. Y'all know we wouldn't have said this. If this was a few years ago, we wouldn't have said this. But I bet you, Eileen, I think your best bet is to cool your jets and then come back to Days. I'm just going to say that because...
See the long story. If I was her, I would want to see a long story document. And I know we're not... We usually don't advocate that for her character.
But I'm saying for YNR, returning to Days, to clarify. No.
Well, yes. Days has already done it up for her. She knows they'll write her well. I would want to see a fully fleshed out 60 to 100 page long story projection before I would sign on the dotted line at that show. And it would have to include more than, stop that, Jackie! You know, anybody can play that part. I mean, basically they're doing, if you look at the show now, let's just be real. They have Tracy playing that role on the show. Now she's there to go, stop that, Jackie, and slap her thigh when Jack act crazy. Or, stop that, Phyllis, quit being hoish. I mean, they just interchanged them. And it's like, no, Ashley, and I love Tracy too, but it's okay to kind of use Tracy for that now because they killed her daughter, so Tracy can be Aunt Tracy to come in and kind of be the matriarch. But Ashley freaking Abbott, beauty, Victor's, you know.
They should bring Ashley back and pit Jill against Ashley and make that the new rivalry.
It's an old rivalry. They've always
Well, I know, but I'm saying considering Because they don't have any rivalries now. I mean, last episode we were talking about the fact that they don't have anything with Jill going on. But if they're going to write a new storyline, quote unquote, bring these two up and pit them against each other.
I mean, it could be Ashley and Abby against Billy and Jack at Jabot. The, you know, there's always been a patriarchal slant to that. Ashley's always been the smart, dutiful, brilliant one down in the labs, but Jack has never treated her like she had any right to have a say-so in Jabot. They could be doing the same thing with Abby, and that's what Abby could lure her. Abby could ask her mom to come back to town because, you know, Jack is, Uncle Jack isn't listening to her. He's just patting her on the head and, but, you know, they, for them, for that to work, Jabot storylines have to be more, and I said this last week, so I have to, forget popping, they have to exist. A Jabot story is not Lily and Abby meeting at Crimson Lights and talking about penises that they...
Well, let's talk, they let's talk about with. Sharon's interest in another penis, which is Nick. What do you guys think of how that's evolving? Jillian?
This would have been a good storyline if she was, you know, trying to show, I don't know, Nick's current woman, who is Avery, why she is the number one stunner, and she will always be Nick's, the one that Nick always returns to. The whole Phyllis thing is just, I mean, how many times can we beat that over its head? I mean, the whole, you know, I am going to get rid of the DNA test, so Summer is not yours anymore, but you're still with Avery. That didn't make any sense at all. It would have made sense if Phyllis and Nick were together, but whatever. I mean, it's stupid. The execution was flawless, but the payoff was just dumb. It was just dumb. And Sharon,
it was unnecessary. Sharon has snatched him back from Phyllis over and over again.
Well, she don't even need to do it.
Wow, I mean, this is Victor Newman's boy, and that's where everybody's always like, oh, he's so much more like Nikki. He's definitely like his father in the fact that he's fickle with the penis. So it's like, Sharon didn't have to use a DNA switch to get that
and
man
she
back.
She was talking to herself like Sammy Brady this last week.
Oh, she is ridiculous. She is absolutely ridiculous. You know, that whole, it's been a lot of, you know, Mel went off last week. I mean, I'm so disgusted about that Carmine story. I'm just like.
Let's talk about that. Ugh. What are your guys' thoughts about how that turned out?
I mean, I'm not amused with that. You know, I'm going to steal that again from you, Jordan. Sorry, baby. But I'm not amused with that. It started off as a phenomenal storyline. I know some Lauren and Michael fans are just like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. It gave them something to do instead of her saying, Gloria, don't you do that. Or him saying to Kevin, Kevin, what are you doing again? Do I have to bail you out? And him trying to act like F. Lee Bailey and bailing his family members out. It gave them something to do. It was hot. It was steamy. It channeled back into Lauren's Hellcat roots. You know, these new babies are like, I can't believe Lauren did that. She gave a young buck a heart attack. So, yeah, I can believe it. Shit. You know, Lauren threw a bitch across the room in a lab and didn't care that any acid would have gotten on her. It just revitalized them, and for them to make him just so cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs was just ridiculous.
Out of left field.
Yes, I
mean, he put Chloe in a trunk, or thought it was Chloe, but then it was Abby. But he was never. I mean, if he would have been deranged during all of that, he would have just choked Abby's little neck, wrung her little neck and killed her. I mean, you know, now we're supposed to believe this man who is obviously, by the looks of him, had plenty of punani in his life, went so...
I was going to say, they should use him for the next Let's Get Zesty commercial.
I mean, yeah, that would work. But I mean, now he is that crazy after one affair. You know, it's not like, I mean, when you play those type of stories with Kevin's or, you know, Sheila's, you know, where they're Sheila was, you know, like this obsessed, kind of weird, socially awkward nurse that fell in love with the pretty doctor. Kevin was, you know, this little weird, awkward guy who
had been,
you know, who met Lily on.
Treated terribly by his dad.
But
too.
I'm like,
I mean, there was a lot of motivation.
Carmine, you can tell, Carmine has been getting the nanny since he was 13 years old.
He's a gangster's son, so I'm pretty sure as a gangster's son, and especially how he
and
looked,
he's gorgeous.
His dad probably had hoes.
Yes, he's that's gorgeous. That's what I'm trying to say.
He's gorgeous. Let's just be real.
They probably were tossing hookers through his bedroom. They probably would just, he probably had to run them off and be like, damn, I need some Gatorade.
And before I get tweeted that pretty people do bad things, I realized that. But a beautiful man like that is not that hard up that he is going to get that crazy.
Well, he may be hard up. But.
Right, but he's not going to get that crazy where he has to do that. And even if he would in real life, because, you know, I mean, Matt Clark was a beautiful man and he did some awful things. But that was, you know, that was threaded better. It's like there was no need for this. And, you know, you've seen all this social media reaction. Even if that was your end game, it was originally General Hospital's end game for Luke Spencer to be killed off in 13 weeks. This is where you pay attention to your fans and who's becoming popular, and you decide to adjust your story because of that. I'm not saying that these shows have to write based on what we say or what the people say on Twitter, but when you see the reaction that Marco Dapper gets because of your new regime, because, you know, Maria kind of wasted him, you see this reaction you're generating with this affair. Why would it be your thought process to go ahead and just turn him into a psycho loser crazy? Why?
Let's talk about the most scintillating thing on YNR. Jillian, what do you think of Chelsea giving birth?
That sounds like...
Sorry, I just woke up. I mean, it's cracks me up with this whole thing, and I'm doing the ghetto hand clap because that's when you know you're frustrated when you do the ghetto hand clap. You know what makes me giggle of this whole thing?
I can know because I don't see nothing funny about it.
No, let me tell you. I find funny, not funny, haha, I mean funny, irony. Steve Burton, when he was on GH, he did not like when Jason was Mr. G. Gosh Willikers as Jason Quartermain. He wanted them to shake things up. That's when AJ wrapped his ass around a tree, and thus Jason Morgan was born, and he became scintillating. And then when he fast forward to 20 plus years now, when he jumps to YNR, he says that, oh, I want to laugh again. I want to do something lightweight, which is what he had before. I find it ironic that you're playing the same damn character that you complained about before they shook things up. The only thing is that you're not wearing those Coogee sweaters. AKA
it ain't Christmas time yet.
Right, a.k.a. the Cosby sweaters. You know, to me, he still has a little Jason Morgan in him when he tells Adam, you know, don't talk to her like that. And Adam's like, bitch, or what? Or you gonna see what I'm gonna do. I'm like, okay. You see him try to bring it out, and then he's still a bland and dumb character. You're making his character dumb. I think what would have been, you know, even though we know that pesky GH owns Jason Morgan character thing, blah, 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 blah thing, I think if Jill was slick, Jill and Josh, I should say, if they were slick, when Adam keeps fucking with this boy, I think it would have been hot as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But then again, it's also part of his character, is if he grabbed Adam, flung him up against the wall, and reached around his back pocket and pulled out a nickel-plated Desert Eagle and said, boy, you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I am the baddest shooter in all the land. And then for people to be like, are they referring to GH?
And then Paul Williams would bust through that door, spitting everywhere, crying, stop it, Ricky! Stop it right now, Ricky! Ricky, I said put that knife down and shoot shit out of everybody.
Another thing they could have done, I mean, I don't know if either of you guys watched Justified, but in a recent season they had a storyline where you basically had a mob prince and his dad sent an enforcer to town. You could have basically had Marco Dapper be the wayward mob prince, and Jason Morgan comes to town to make sure that Carmine is on the straight and narrow.
You know who he should have come to town as? The new sexy chemist at Jabot Cosmetics, who makes Chloe and everybody's poo nanny wet.
That would require he take off a shirt.
18? He could have been JT. He could have been a lot of things.
He could have been the sexy new chemist who Ashley, not Ashley, who Abby bumps heads at Jabot when he's like, I want to shake up these boring staid brands. What is this Glow by Jabot? And then she can be like, excuse me? My mother invented the, you know, they could have clashed at the office place because that's why people watch The Young and the Restless. They don't watch The Young and the Restless for Carpenter, whatever. Now he building somebody a cabinet. How you got time to launch Crimson Lights and you got to build Sharon them a baby cabinet? Why is that? Why can't Billy's ass call Billy Newman? Billy Abbott is rich. He does not.
And his wife has $500 million.
And he ain't no. Look, he got a trust fund too. Why did they? What? Nobody had in it before Steve Burton joined The Young and the Restless. Sharon Newman, a multiple divorcee to rich men, couldn't afford to fix her damn kitchen. Now Billy can't get in the Yellow Pages and find somebody
forget the Yellow Pages. You can't call up Meg Berkus.
That is why I miss Bill Bell. I am going to go to New Orleans soon and meet with some voodoo priestesses and stuff and see if I can't communicate with him.
Priestesses,
Judah Priest, whatever. I'm going to talk to some voodoo priestesses because I want to communicate with him because I need to be able to turn I want to be like Lafayette. So he can just jump at me and I can call Angelica McDaniel up and say, this is what Bill Bell told me to tell you. Because they're not watching.
You want to communicate with him because, you know, I think Bill Bell, if we would have just be like, oh, shamalama.
He might be an angry spirit when he takes over your body.
We call Celeste up. What do you think? Darling, he's saying, what is this bullshit, darling? It's darling. What the fuck, darling?
Speaking of bullshit, what do you think of Adam being accused of rape?
They need to watch YouTube. If you watch the YouTube, I've been posting them because I'm tired. During Wine On, I'm posting YouTube clips. Kay Chancellor would walk into John Abbott's house dressed to the nines, dripping in diamonds and furs. Jill Abbott and Jack would be scheming at Jabot when Jabot was still a subsidiary of Newman about how Jill was going to get Brad's job so that she could help Jack get control of Jabot. There's none of that now. This is what I've always prided this show in. It is a fact that YNR has been more diligent about keeping their Corvettes on that show. You have them, but you won't write these storylines for them. And I'm not saying just go ahead and start retelling all the stories for all of the people who are 60 and older on the show. You bring in their children and grandchildren and continue the same story threads, much like we see on the New Dallas. The reason we went apeshit as fans for the New Dallas is that the Ewing and the Barnes feud continues via a new generation of sexy. We have a new JR. We have a new Bobby. We have a new Pam and John Ross and Christopher and Bobby. We do not have that on the show, and that's why it is so frustrating. We don't have the young Jack Abbott, which we all said Billy Miller was when he joined this show. We screamed, those of us who knew Terry Lester, which I love Peter Bergman, but we were like, this boy reminds us of young Terry Lester. What does he do?
Blake Hood.
He is running around begging Victoria to take him back and trying to staff his stupid restaurant. You know, as rich as Billy is, rich people buy restaurants all the time. Diddy owned a restaurant here in Atlanta. He wasn't sitting there firing dishwashers and stuff. He wasn't the one telling people when they had their shift to bust tables. What?
Vanderpump Rules has taught me a lot. She only shows up once a week.
Why is Billy Abbott doing that when his family owns a fucking cosmetics dynasty? Why is Adam's only story these little me versus Victor and let's interlude this person and that person in and out of it and now this stupid rape story? Why is Noah at Newman Enterprises? Why is Abby running Jabot Cosmetics, the biggest joke in the world? Because I'm sorry, this Abby, like the other Abby was silly. You know, we loved her because we love Marcy Rowland, but they wrote her as a silly Paris Hilton type. There is no way I believe that any board of directors, any investor, any department store chain buyer would ever take this daffy girl seriously running a multinational
cosmetics. And the new Kyle?
They would have voted Abby out. simply because of the whole, they wouldn't approve Abby. Board members would have been like, her answers as a naked heiress, no sir, no ma'am. Stockholders won't approve that.
Why don't you make Abby like Ivanka Trump? You know, she's beautiful, she's blonde, she's hot, she's sexy, but she's in command. She's not, oh my God, Lils, what's up with you and Tyler, Lily Willy Woo Woo Wee? No! No, 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 no.
And then we get to the other topic that I wanted to bring up.
Adam the Rape?
No. We'll just bypass that because, as Jamie said, it was a stupid story. But let's talk about Neil and his equally pathetic story.
I'd rather talk about the rape than that. Yeah.
Look, Christoph St. John said, look, I got a storyline. I don't care what it is. I got a storyline. The other regime used to have me show up when it was government payday, so y'all shut up. But the rape storyline, is just so, like, I just feel as though Jill is trying to force that Siobhan, Melanie.
Your lucky charm.
Girl, yes.
If she was a stronger actress, it might work. Because, you know, they've brought people in to play that dangerous interloper. But yeah. This girl is not Brianna Brown from General Hospital. She's not...
Well, what even about that actress who was on about the same time who used to be Adam's gambling, like, scheming pal?
Scott, yeah.
She was a good actress. She's in the volcano, Luke.
Well, I know she is, but I'm saying she was a pretty good actress for to be able to do that.
Right. This storyline...
This is the only purpose this serves is to give someone who is friends with Jill Farren Phelps a job. And I challenge any of them to say that that is not the case. Because why? Why in the history of this show, in the 40th anniversary year of this show, was this fucking storyline necessary? General Hospital gets raked over the coals every time someone even mentions a rape this regime had nothing to do with. And Wynaw does this rape, and nobody, you know, I don't see anybody going, what?
They're playing fast and loose with rape, too, but I don't see nobody's ringing the alarm. I mean,
like, if I was Adam, I'd go in there and say, Paul, that's a lie. I can't even see.
I just think this whole rape storyline is just like, they don't know. To me, it's like they don't know what to do. They want to, like, you know, do something to prop up how bad Adam is and for people to be like, you know, it could be in the realm. You know he pretended to be gay. You know he fucked with his eyesight. You know he played with Ashley's afterbirth. You know he dressed up in a purple dress and was twerking. They just want to do something.
Well, see, that you mentioned that. That's how they could save this shit. If they, on a Friday tag, Melanie picks up the phone and says, the plan is working. And then they cut to Rafe, the gay boy Adam messed over.
Yeah.
That would work if we found out that, or Heather, you know, cut to Veil Bloom going, perfect. You know, then
oh,
it would work.
The chaos you just mentioned by bringing up Heather and the many different versions of that
character.
Well,
the fans loved Veil Bloom best. So, you know, even, the fans loved Veil Bloom best after she was recast because it seemed like nobody liked her.
No one liked her until she was gone.
Yeah, like, I mean.
But if you cut to one of Adam's former enemies on the show, even Ashley, hell, that's how you would have brought Ashley back if it was, you know, of course, that would be kind of out of character for Ashley. But you know what? I don't think it would because you killed my baby and then
It ain't out of character for Ashley because you know Ashley talked to a shoe on the window.
Leave my beauty alone. But if somebody who he screwed over, I would go with Rafe. I would go because Rafe is an attorney.
And
that is
Ashley teaming up together.
You know, I would have gone with Rafe being like, maybe Rafe's new man is some big-time attorney who has brought him in as his new little concubine boy. Plus, you know, like maybe he's this older, wealthy guy who owns a firm, like the firm on The Good Wife, and he's made Rafe his new man, and, you know, he's, like, using his power to destroy Adam. You know, he told his older, sexy daddy what Adam did to him, and now they're plotting together, you know, to take Adam down or something. I mean, of course,
Rafe's cat daddy going after Adam. That would be kind of cool.
No, you cast some sexy person, like GH has done with William DeVry, some sexy older soap guy.
Thank you for the transition.
You know, as Rafe's lover, and he's like, I can't believe he did that. You know, I'd cast Jed Allen now. I can't believe
he did. No.
You would cast Jed Allen as the next Carmine.
No, I would not, but I would cast some. I'm trying to think who. Peter Berg. No, not Peter Berg. Peter Reckle would be his beefy daddy lawyer man who is financing him taking down Adam. And he's like, I can't believe he did that to you.
Then it would be Rafe who's getting mauled.
There you go. Hey, somebody needs to get mauled.
Let's talk about General Hospital. This last week we found out that Julian, or William DeVry, is his character Julian. Derek Wells is the father of Sam. Jamie, thoughts?
Well, now, all we know is that Alexis was hypnotized by Sam's real daddy, Kevin. Because we know that girl Livy Locke. We know you Livy Locke. I'm just being silly. Yes, we know that Alexis messed with a dude named Julian 20 years ago, obviously. since she and Bill DeVry are Kelly Monaco's parents. Hey, it's soaps.
Lucas is a son,
yes,
too.
Yes, follow Lucas's bio daddy. I love it. I said this before when people were on Twitter tweeting me, well, you don't think it's ridiculous? Come to find out, he's only 7 years younger than that last actor who played Julian Jerome, according to Ron Carlovati on Twitter. And William DeVry is in his mid. I mean, yes, Kelly Monaco is in her late 30s, but they don't write her. Ooh. I mean, Sam still wears sports bras all over town. They do not write her as in her late 30s. They write her as in that early 30s age range. And, you know, it's a soap opera. Angela Lansbury, I mean, it's entertainment. Forget soap opera. Angela Lansbury played Elvis's mother in a movie. In Gone with the Wind, the woman who played Scarlett's mother was younger than Vivian Leigh. And to bring it on home to soaps, the last guy that played Bill Horton on Days was 20-something years younger than Ed Mallory. When they brought him back for, Grand's funeral, I was like, wait a minute. Bill is supposed to be in an adult diaper somewhere.
Shut up.
Sponge bath from Jennifer Rose, and he came back like, look at here, I'm ready to penetrate Kate. And to say, you know, so I mean, soaps do this all the time. Constance Towers is, you know, I guess she and Liz would be in the same age range. She just kind of aged.
She a little bit younger than Liz, yeah.
So I mean, soaps, especially with characters that have been gone for a long time, and this is my thing, if I can accept that E.J. DeMara is Will's stepfather on Days of Our Lives, when Will was learning Spanish in elementary school when E.J. was born, I can
accept anything. Is Adam, like, younger than Billy?
Yeah, Adam, that's another one. That, you know, Y&R is known for that. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I don't like the whole, it's just too many returns from the dead for my taste. I'm just waiting for them to dig Mikos and Victor and Tupac up and put them on that show. It's just too many returns from the dead.
The thing about the returns from the dead, GH and Days have always done that. Pretty much every major popular
character. This is a lot for GH.
But you, Miss Bo, have been saying you want the Bob back.
I do. I just thought he would have been someone new from the Jerome clan. That would have been cool, but shit.
I don't know that character, and like, you know, I wasn't watching then, but from what I know now on screen,
He was a bad.
Like, it's brilliant that they have this guy with a dual personality, basically, as, you know, not a dual person. Wait, let me strike that from the record. Not a dual personality. No personalities. He has a dual identity. He's this suave publishing czar, and, you know, so they kind of get to recreate their Todd character a little bit. And then you have him being Julian Jerome, this iconic mobster who tangled with Duke and Anna, who fathered. I mean, as I'm saying this, it makes way more sense that he be this guy than some random person.
He would have been maybe Julian's son, but, you know, yeah. Julian, in the beginning, give you a little history, he was not cool with his family shenanigans. He was not cool with that cuckoo sister Olivia shenanigans. He was cool with Duke and Anna. Then when he came back, he just decided he wanted it all for himself. I hope they play this part up. And this is why I'm like, you know, with the age thing, it's a little... He had a thing for you-know-who, Lucy.
Victor had a thing for Lucy.
They
said in the line that the father was obsessed with. Victor Jerome was obsessed with Lucy. Because he said something about that to Ava. And they cut to, while he said it, you know, Frank always has them cut to the character that they're talking about. Victor Jerome had a thing for Lucy.
Yeah, I got it mixed up. Victor. Yeah, Victor was the one who swallowed a friggin' pendant.
I mean, and think about what this brings for the future of the show. It brings EOQ into play because he obviously wants to use EOQ as a front for his mob business, which I've always wondered why they didn't try that. I mean, I guess Sonny did to an extent, but he's going to go head up against Sonny because we know Connie Kate ain't long for this world. He's the father of Sam. He's the father of Carly's
billion-dollar baby.
Yeah, he's the father of Carly's gay brother who is out there in the ethos somewhere. And he's played by somebody who is sexy as hell, and that matters to me. Daytime television.
I was kind of hoping that, you know, my part with the mob thing, I was hoping that we finally got a lady boss, that we found out that Ava's whole artsy-fartsy thing was a front.
You see that they had her. Anna and Duke were talking about how the person who shot Olivia was an expert marksman, and that it was definitely a mob-style hit. So Ava has a hint of Faith Roscoe in her, though. Get it twisted. Just picking out your favorite Picasso. A bitch is deadly, too.
An art cover would be a good way to go around the world assassinating
exactly
people.
I mean, it's, you know, I hope she like starts an art smuggling ring. I mean,
speaking of international heists, though, Jillian, what did you think of Holly and Luke this week?
I mean, I'm cool with Holly being back because I've been tweeting it into the ether, but I don't think they will do it because he likes to show his natural Australian ass out. I've always wanted them to see them finally, since they have almost all the players back from the dead and shit and on canvas. I've always wanted GH to finally do who is really the love of so-and-so's life. With, you know, is Anna really the love of Robert's life, or is it Holly? Is Robert really the love of Anna's life, or is it Duke? You know what I mean? I really wanted them to play that out. That's why I was happy.
Well, I'm going to give y'all a little intel. What? On this whole situation. And I'm liking Holly for once, but I will say this. What Holly is doing right now wasn't written for Holly. They wanted that boy. This is how God works, because I'm like, ooh, thank you, boy, for being busy. They wanted that boy to play Ethan? To be Luke's ace during this storyline. And what is his name? Nathan Parsons, according...
Thank God.
From what I hear, he was he was unavailable, and so they decided to get him a Sam's.
Well,
and
I'm shit, like, butt-ass cancel. I guess GH said,
I'm like, thank you, God. And I like how they're writing her. I like how, you know, that was pimp when Luke gets the gun, and he's like, you know, good cover, English. And then he pulls that off, and she's grinning like a chess cat. I'm like, oh, so is this the Holly that old-time fans keep telling me about? Because all I've seen is Luke.
My problem with those scenes were the fact that they went and had it. They stopped in the middle of a heist to sit down and have a conversation and get fingerprints on a glass.
So you just started watching soap operas.
But I'm saying, seriously, they could have at least had some gloves on him when he was drinking the water.
Like I was trying to say, Holly was a grifter back in the day. It's only when Guza brought her back, he played fast and loose and funky with her. Because
people diss Rod kind of about the whole camping thing. And I love Guza. Y'all know I loved me some Guza.
Yeah, I do too.
Guza did not write a lot of camp. He didn't. You know, he wrote it for Spinelli or Diane or side characters. But in my years of watching this show, when he brought back those 80s era super spies, he always played it for hijinks and laughs. And I always remember the fans being pissed online. Like when he brought, you know, the first thing he did when he brought Anna back was have her come down on that helicopter and kick Robert. Now, I watched Anna, of course, on All My Children, and she was kind of this gothic haunting character. So I was like, why? I guess she, I'm like, oh, so poor, that's kind of silly. And
no, well, a little bit, you know, the kicking thing, I'll give Guza a pass with that because that was their shtick. I mean, back in the day, Robert, like, fucked with Anna's head. He was like, you know, you look a little fat, you know, you starting to look like a mom, and she thought she was still sexy. Anna got mad and hog tied his ass up in his apartment.
Right. And I get that, but you know, in recent years though, prior to this regime, when they brought them back, they had her in the Noah Drake and his twin story. Or, you know, they had Holly just coming back as a horny house cat trying to hump everybody. You know, you know, and that didn't seem, you know, because I see that a lot. Well, Cartini brings back the vets, but they don't write them like that. Well, that's why I always say with GH, with all of these other shows, I'll explain with just briefly with the why I judge the four shows on daytime, why the way I do. Y&R, it had a singular vision for 30 years. And then Kay Alden was the heiress apparent. And she, in my opinion, sperm caper be damned, she and Jack Smith kept Bill Bell's vision intact. Then we had LML, who decided to write Knots Landing in Genoa City.
That cabin cold. What was
I thought was bad at the time, but looking back, LML's white art overall was so much better than it's been since, because we still
think a lot of people on that show
were. Oh my god, we still got Drew versus Carmen Mesta. We got that awful divorce for Victor and Nikki where they got to talk so nasty to each other. I did not like Jack as the everybody trying to be a politician. But looking back, you know, hindsight being 2020, it's like we were so used to the Bill Bell Y&R and LML changed it up. But and then Maria came on and fixed LML's stuff, but then she did great doing that, but her stuff, in my opinion, Maria's own writing was worse than LML's, and now we have this, which I don't quite think, I don't think it's worse than Maria's. It's just
October.
It's just boring. It's just really, really boring and flat. So that's why I judge, personally, me, JB Shamar, judge Y&R, because I'm like, even when I was,
who are you using your government on them?
That show, Bill Bell kept it consistent and well written and well plotted. Even when, for me as a young guy, you know, I kind of thought, oh, this show moves kind of slow for me because I did want a faster show, but still well done. Days has had three distinct eras. It had the Bill Bell era of the 60s and the 70s, which was very much akin to what we see on Y&R. You know, lots of psychological drama and forbidden love, you know, and people loving each other's, you know, brothers loving each other's women. And, you know, that classic Bill Bell psychological, you know, sex stories. And then the 80s was, a you know, larger than life, super couples and very GH-esque. And then in the 90s, it became batshit crazy spoofing of the genre with Devil Possessions and Buried Alive and all that. So I can see how Days has these fans who are like, well, Days should be this, Days should be that. But not a GH. B&B is another one that basically had a singular vision. Brad is a little more funky than his daddy, but, you know, it still had a pretty singular vision its whole time.
Brad is fresher than his daddy. Fresh. You
have General Frickin' Hospital, which had its original vision, the 60s and the 70s, which was going to get it canceled. It was just a drama, you know, this drama about a doctor in a suburban New York town. And, you know, it had all the little relationship drama at the hospital. Will Jesse Brewer's husband commit? Will she ever admit to her feelings to Dr. Steve? You know, and that was going to get the show canceled. And then they brought in Gloria Monty. And Gloria Monty did things that if someone did today on a soap, I think Twitter would go crazy. She put all of the characters on the back burner that were there from the origin of the show, just from what I'm reading, and I know that those characters stayed essential to the show, but she brought in a whole lot of newbies the dreaded newbie word. Luke, Laura, Robert, Anna, the whole that pantheon of 5 to 8 years of a time period, she brought on more newbies than anybody I could ever imagine. But the thing of it is, those newbies worked and they became popular and they became what is now considered the vets. But then, you know, after the 80s, everyone said, oh, the spy games and supernatural stuff is over. So let's do, you know, character driven. Let's do socially relevant. So that's when Claire Levine came in. Claire's out. Guza's in. It's all, you know, Guza took one element of the show, the mob, and decided, and the mob has been there since the beginning, pretty much. I mean, mm-hmm. One of Marty's first storylines was a mob shootout at GH. So Guza took that one singular element of the show and decided, this is the show I want to write because I love Sopranos, and I'm going to turn it into this show. And now you got Ron and Frank, who are charged with taking all of those visions. And
don't forget Garen Wolf, even though he was there for 2 minutes.
No, I left out the Lessas. His impact was Helena's being 95 years old and having a 20-year-old daughter that she killed herself. That's his impact, the end. You know, and then you have you have Ron and Frank now trying to figure out how to satisfy fans who have loved all, you know, of these various genres. I mean, YNR, it's like, get it back to Bill Bell's type of show, and you got a ball game. But it's not that simple with the other shows, in my opinion.
GH, you know, a lot of people got mad with the Guza thing because, you know, before he came on with Holly, the reason why people were so, you know, ambivalent and just, you know, not really feeling her there was when, you know, when she came on the show the last time and when Guza brought her back, she totally rewrote her because Holly, the last time you saw her in Port Charles, she was helping Mac raise Robin. Then fast forward to 10, you know, 15 some odd years later, the girl that she was calling her own, that she was going to raise, she was playing fast and loose with her health. That's why a lot of people was just like, what the fuck, Guza? And I had that moment, too. I was like, wait a minute, dude. She wouldn't have done that. So I could see why a lot of people, you know, were a little skeptical. I mean, Ron is just going by what Guza pretty much left off. But then
I think that's – you just said a point. Then Luke can transition, I promise. But that's one thing that I think pisses fans off because I've seen all week long people have been tweeting me about why won't Ron undo Luke and Holly's affair. Ron seems to be writing to all of the history of the show, even the stuff that people didn't like. He doesn't just leave it on the cutting room floor. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I definitely want that kind of, you know, whenever somebody takes up a YNR, I never want So Long, Sister Killer brought up. But it does seem that Ron is like, even if it was a Garen Wolf story, if it's part of the show's history, I'm going to write to it. And that does tend to, like, you know, biggest example is Franco, something I think we all feel could have been left on the cutting room floor.
It could have been like, it never happened.
Right.
Let's talk about All My Children. Prospect Park announced this last week that All My Children and One Life to Live will air their season finales. One Life to Live will air it on August 19th, while All My Children will wrap its first season finale on September 2nd. In the press release, they announced that future seasons will benefit from the launch of a new user-friendly web portal and app that will make it easier for fans to connect with their favorite characters and will take their level of interaction to a whole new level. Jamie, what do you think of this development? And, like, my first reaction when I heard it was, initially we were promised hundreds of episodes a year, then we went down to 2 a week, and now it's ending in September and August.
But yeah, this podcast, you was bitching about them sets.
Well, I still maintain that the sets could help. Jamie, what are your thoughts on the season finales, and are you hearing anything about what this means?
You know, I'm hearing stuff, but it's not stuff that I'm going to reveal because this is what I'm going to say. Kudos to Jeff Quadnick and Rick Frank. I always have to think, is it Rick Frank or Frank Rich? Kudos to all of them. Kudos to the cast and crews of these shows because they got 2 new seasons of these canceled soaps and I applaud the hell out of them. I have been frustrated over the course of the year with all of the ups and the downs and the this and the that. But, you know, I mean, I can't be a hypocrite. What we do is allow soap fans to learn way more than they ever knew about the ups and the downs of the genre. And there were more ups and downs with Santa Barbara than I ever knew until the later years. Until the later years. And let me tell you, yes, since you clown my Santa Barbara last week. Let the record show.
We should drink at the end of a podcast that doesn't have a Santa Barbara
let
mention.
The record show, Miss Bo, that you are a fan of a short-lived NBC soap opera, too, called Generations, and it lasted 2 years to Santa Barbara's 8.
But we don't play a drinking game to that.
Every damn time, though. Like, oh, shut up. Oh, I hope that big feet drop on your head.
Dude,
I saw that episode. That made me holler.
You know what, Luke? Let me do a drinking game every time you say Emmy Rowland. Now, you don't say Emmy Rowland. Marcy Rowland! Marcy Rowland! Marcy Rowland! How about you?
I haven't said her name in a long time.
My 12 steps if I started a drinking game the first 4 years of this podcast when you always talking
right there with you, friend.
Rebecca Bunnick needs to be the president. Rebecca Bunnick needs to take over the House of Parliament. Rebecca Bunnick.
We don't even have a parliament.
I think we should, because I think I should be king. But back to what I was saying, we didn't know all the behind the scenes crazy before blogs like ours allowed, you know, fans to know that. I mean, Mimi Torchin's version of Soap Opera Weekly definitely had that journalistic, we're going to do some digging and Mimi's going to take on Ken Corday and let you know that she got blacklisted. But then after she left, the magazines kind of became more
soft.
Yeah, well, you know, they became more the industry
pasteurized.
Well, the industry started suffering, and so they, you know, to stay alive, they all had to work together. So it you know, it kind of lost that bite. But you know, I mean, now we allow people to know way more than I ever knew as a soap fan. It used to just be, look, when my favorite Kelly Capwell left, how I found out about it is when I walked in there to sit in there in my pajamas, and they said the role of Kelly Capwell is not being played by this bitch, and I'd be like, that's not Robin Wright. Why is she? Who is that woman, mama? You know, that's what that was. But now we know everything. We know, you know, the average fan, if they want to, can know when Kelly Sullivan's contract cycle is up and when, if she has a 13-week cycle or a 26-week cycle. I mean, we are at a point where we're just in. And so I thought about that. I'm like, okay, if I was just still Joe Schmo soap fan who knew nothing, I'd probably just be pretty damn happy that all my children returned and it gave me, you know, all these episodes, and I'd be hoping for the best that it returns. Just like any TV show, every year we hope the shows come back. So if I'm looking at
revenge
from Joe Schmo soap fan point of view, then I'm just thinking, ooh, I just hope it comes back. Now, and in that regard, kudos to all of them. I do say All My Children got it right.
Yeah.
80% of the time, One Life to Live needs
60, maybe 50.
It's reboot to, you know, to get itself together. It already needs a reboot.
Yeah, when One Life to Live comes back, I would say the best advice for Jeff and them is don't listen to Luke about them damn sets. I think they really do need a reboot because, you know, you harped about sets. Story brings out them sets. And if they had a better story, we probably would have seen those damn sets that you kept harping about. One Life to Live needs a serious reboot. To me, they predicated themselves on the GH3, well, the former Landview 3. And they kept saying they wanted those characters back. They wanted those characters back. They wanted them back. They wanted them back, I say. And they got them back. The only one they used was Todd. The other two,
And they didn't even use him well.
You never heard. You heard them talk about John. You would see Michael Easton's picture up. They barely talked about Star. I don't even think they did talk about Star. I got to go back and watch.
That's the thing that gets me with it, because you know I'm not making that mistake of siding. You know, because that is for lawyers and judges and magistrates to figure out who was right and who was wrong. But right. I will say this, from a creative standpoint. Instead of fighting like a – now, yeah, I totally understand them fighting like a dog with a bone over Todd. I mean, Roger Howarth came back to – Roger Howarth came back to daytime and set it on fire with that character. So I could definitely see, you know, it being a biblical, you know, the two mothers holding the child and, you know, God having to say, I'm going to cut the baby in the middle if y'all don't stop. You know, but with the rest, I'm like – this show had 40-something years of history. You know, James DePava is out there like, put me in, coach. Put me Hello. In, coach. You know, there are several. What's the dude that played Kevin Buchanan? People, the last one. People loved Dan that Gauthier. Guy, Dan Gauthier. I never thought I'd see the day when I couldn't remember a name and Luke had to help me. I'm giving you a cyber high five.
It happens at least once a podcast.
Bullshit. But Dan Gauthier, you know, they could have brought him back and Mac. And I mean, there's a ton of guys out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jillian said it best, stories. I mean, this whole Vicky being about to go broke over $5 million. I mean, I'm so happy they did I'm so happy they did a storyline about Vicky's publishing dynasty. But, I mean, they watered down. We've always been treated to believe that the Lords were billionaires, that, you know, Todd, the fortune was so massive that Todd used his part to start his own publishing empire. But now you mean to tell me Vicky freaking Lord was going to be made or broken over? The headlines show
with the Washington Post,
you know, people are crying foul that it was worth a billion or in some change a few years, you know, in 93, and now it's worth 250 million. I mean, I don't even know what major city newspaper would. There's no such thing as a small town rag newspaper is worth more than $5 million. They really kind of watered down Vicky's power and her, you know, and Dorian's
status.
Dorian's been written like a cartoon. I sometimes look and I'm like, is that Hecuba? Because, you know, that is not the Dorian that I watched on YouTube, because I was not watching this show years ago, obviously. I only started watching in like 2006-ish or maybe 2004, I can't remember. But, you know, that was not the Dorian of old that, you know, that they advertise in those brilliant promos. All those moments, like with Dorian telling Vicky that she killed Victor Lord, and all. That was not that Dorian. This Dorian has been a cartoon Dorian, and you know,
and meanwhile,
wigs on and talking about the pedigree, you know, fund, and you know, and they chickened out on so much of the. We're gonna be sexier than all the other shows. I mean, yeah, they had everybody saying bullshit every 5 minutes, but I was told. From a very reliable source. See, that's why my gut keeps me from breaking stuff. I was told that the reveal of Corbin Blue's character's tattoo was going to be on his ass. Now it's on his foot. I'm like, what?
Yep, that happened this week.
All of this, you know.
We know why, because they're on their own. And I guess Oprah says, you know, live your best life, but I don't want to live your best life by showing your booty.
The first episode of Have and Have Nots, they had what's his name getting a rub.
And he's been raped by Tika Sumpter's character about 4 times on that show. I mean, she just pulled it out and put it in. I mean, you know, they don't do a lot of language on that show. But I mean, where was all that edgy? But you know, again, not trying to. But it. This is the thing. Not trying to beat them up, but they are back, so they're gonna have to be. They're gonna have to stand criticism. But again, my overall take from it is kudos that you managed to bring it back. I would I would walk through the streets of DeKalb, Texas, naked if they brought back Santa Barbara or Another World. No, I wouldn't. Don't hold me to that. But if they did, I would be screaming. Look, if they brought back...
Don't bring it back just for that reason. No, because you ain't calling me talking about they busted you for lewd conduct. Don't you call this number for that shit.
The reporter calls for comment, and I'll be like, who's Jamie Giddens?
If I got food content, then I'd still get a chance to come back to all my children as a leading man.
I am in love with all my children. Who would have thought we would have? It's a flip. Who would have thought we would have been in love with all my children? I mean, that's what I'm here.
I kind of get it, though, because One Life was in such a great shape because of the creative team it had. Terrible at the end. All my children had nowhere to go but up.
I think what they should do is when they start up on season two for One Life to Live, they need to use the same team that launched All My Children, the same writing team, because they gone now. That's another thing that they just switch writers, like they switch draws over there. They need to bring the same creative team.
I don't even know who's writing either show anymore.
If you watch One Life to Live, this last week we had Todd and Taya and Blair, and they were really good scenes, but it was all because Todd was leaving town. Like, I feel like Roger Howarth's time in Landview as Todd was absolutely wasted. He had almost no impact, and it was totally wasted.
But Todd and Blair fans did get
no. They're happy for ending. They're happy that they got their ending, which I enjoyed watching it. But I mean, we have powerhouse actresses like Cassie DePaiva and Florencia Lozano, who we've seen what they can do. Florencia had good scenes when Trevor St. John came back and it was discovered that Victor was back, and then she was sidelined. Cassie DePaiva was basically sidelined with the exception of Shelter Crap.
You don't
the
sideline.
Entire season with, until like the last couple weeks where they all of a sudden heated up Blair and Todd again.
Sideline powerhouses like Cassie and Flolo.
No, you don't.
I don't think they had. They bet the whole house on the tale of the two tides. On a previous regime story. If you look at what Cynthia Sidri did to Dallas, she paid homage to the original Dallas, but she created her own rivalry between John Ross and Christopher that drove that show. Yes, you still had the undercurrent of JR versus Cliff Barnes and the ghost of Pam out there lingering, but she set that show up with a new rivalry between those two boys that wasn't really there from the show because they loved each other as little boys. She did her own. That's the thing. That's the trick to, in my opinion, writing a daytime or a primetime show that is based on classic storytelling at this point in the game. If you're taking over a show that's been on the air before that has a mythology to it, you have to find a way to both honor the past but move it forward. You can't relaunch it with everything that happened when it got canceled. Even though we were loving it, I'm like, you got to come up with something to propel it forward.
They didn't use the basic tenets of it. I mean, you have Natalie, which whether or not you like the character herself, she was always a lightning rod character. You had huge fan bases that loved her, and you had huge fan bases that hated her. What did we see her do for most of this first season on One Life to Live? Almost nothing.
Become friends nothing with the other baby mama.
Frenzo was wasted. Blair was wasted. Blair was wasted. Natalie was wasted. The teen set was actually the good thing. And I will say this for One Life to Live. Corbin Blue is the standout for me in this first season. He has been fantastic. I've loved his interaction.
I wanted to see a tattoo on his booty.
You bring up Max, you talk about rivalries. Todd and Max did not like each other. They couldn't stand each other because of Blair. Max has two kids, Frankie and I forget what the other kid's name, Frankie and Leslie. Why don't you bring their boys, they're a boy and a girl. Why don't you bring them to town and have the boy Frankie fall in love with Danny and for Todd to be like, hell no.
And
that's
I can't
a problem right there.
The news stories that they did tell, if you compare the two shows, All My Children told an amazing kick-ass arc for Jesse and Angie and their daughter, ripped from the headlines, human trafficking, so contemporary, so smart. They made Petey a dot-com, you know, much as I love GH, you got the whole town waiting on a headline. And I'm like, it is not.
And they did fantastic work with the Chandlers, too.
But, you know.
With Brooke and Dimitri coming back as well.
It is not 1993 General Hospital. Ain't nobody waiting for no headline on no newspaper in the morning. Somebody would have sent that out in an email blast. But
yeah,
anyway,
in a tweet.
So, but at least you have Petey Cortland, you know, developing apps as, you know, I mean, they revolutionized that show. But with, you go back to One Life and it's like that marriage, you know, the marriage swapping story. I remember when I first started hearing these stories, I was like, ooh, One Life to Live is going to be provocative, you know, marriage swapping. But you pick a couple that nobody cares.
Rama and Vimal or Vimal or whatever the hell his name is should have never came back.
Yeah.
Cares about ramen noodles and...
Well, let's talk a little bit about All My Children, though, and their storylines, because, I mean, when they come back for another season, they have a lot of potential.
Like,
this last week, we saw scenes with Brooke and Dimitri where they sort of shared a moment, and then she got a message from Adam. Mm-hmm. I would really love to see Brooke and Dimitri heat up in season two.
Yes, and
you
then
have
for Erica to come strolling in and be like, still going after my leftovers, huh, bro? Mm-hmm. No, I think I'm done.
You have JR and Kara, and you have Kara and David. They could have really played up
well,
that.
Well, David, time. You know, David. Well, David is getting some good from Colby and showing. I love Jill Larson is such a hoot. I loved Jill Larson as Opal hosted the red carpet
that. So they need to recast Hunter next season.
Who is Hunter?
That boy who can't deliver a line.
They don't. Why even?
Torments Miranda.
They don't need to.
Their team set so terrible.
They need to be in college when they come. I'm gonna be honest. The only one from that set I'd keep is Miranda. I'd get rid of AJ too. I'd cast a different AJ. I'm sorry. Yeah. No offense to the actor, but you know he acts like Jesse Spano when she was addicted to those. I'm so excited. He does that every time he has
inside voice, boo. Inside voice.
I chill with him. I want Angie to just not, you know, Angie ain't even in his storyline. I just want him to come over there and slap him and say, "Shut the hell up, boy."
Yes.
Well, see, and I have not believed since day one that he would have any interest in Miranda, and I am finding it even more difficult to believe.
Hot.
That Miranda has interest in him. No, I figured that he would have interest in Hunter.
I'm so excited! But, you know, yeah, that baby should be recast. You know, I will give him that. He is here and he is acting poorly! He definitely.
Though by acting poorly standards, he's significantly better than some of the other people we've made fun of, like, you know, Lindsay Morgan.
He's terrible. He's not somebody that I would say, hey, go back to college. And I mean, but it's just he's not good. And he gets those, you know, all these angsty scenes. And, you know, whereas Denise, you know, just immediately connects with Eden when she has to do that angsty stuff, you know, from the moment, okay, your dad's been in a coma and you've been sore ass 10 years. He wakes up and he doesn't recognize you. That's when you say, "It's me, Dad, AJ." You don't run out of the.
Calling Sean Evans. I'm like, Lord.
I mean, okay, that might have been. I mean, obviously that was in the writing, but I mean. Maybe the choice could have been to just storm out angrily, but to run out of that room, you know, that's a wild, but you know, all, you know, right up
that
the
wall.
But the thing is that really hasn't changed much.
Yeah.
He is like, here's how I would put it. When I first got my dog Yanto, I got him from the pound and I could tell that he had been on the street for a very long time because any time I took him out for a walk, and there was a dog that was bigger. He had to have he had a Napoleon complex and had to pretend he was the big dog. And I'm sorry, but this AJ pretends that he has a giant Napoleon complex.
I'm so excited! You don't trust me, dude!
I'm like...
I just want someone to be like, dude, tweet me your response, because, gosh,
but I mean, they're, all my children has done fantastic.
I want Celia has to go. When is that?
Celia has to go, too. But Brooke has been fantastic. Edie has been fantastic. Miranda has been fantastic.
Finally addressed that Angie needed to ho-check Jesse about all of the lies. And she did recently. She was like, I put up with you when you was gone for 20 years. And then you come back, you was mad to that white woman. And then you know, come back again and you done bring my baby in the park, Jesse. Oh. And then Jesse was like, Angela, I still love you, girl.
I'm so excited.
Him and Petey need to know how to put their inside voice. David need to doctor their brains and play inside voice.
Angela.
And I don't, and here's a pet peeve for me.
Angie, I'm here for you, Angie.
I want David and Angie so much.
I want you to make me feel good.
When are they going to do that? I'm like, oh, come on.
See, and here's my other problem with the hospital. I mean, the Pine Valley Hospital has actually been pretty good, but I do not understand why we had Jordy Villasuso back for like the first couple episodes. He is a doctor that was extremely popular on the show in its previous run, and yet he's nowhere to be found. And we have this no-name doctor that's at the center of something involving Dixie. And it's like, could you not have found a doctor that we has an actual connection to the show that we care about?
Villasuso, hello. As fine as he is, they did not write for him on the first one, and they didn't write for him on this one. It's like, he was there the whole time, never got any good kitty. Never got any good kitty. You know, that's because we've gone into this realm of, with these super couples, that they can't cheat when a character is presumed dead. Now, you know, Greenlee used to, I mean, Ryan and Greenlee and Kendall and Bess and May, every time one would be presumed dead, they'd run and have grief sex with the other one, you know, because that's what you do. You know, come here and give me some of that dick, you know. But now, you know, Kendall was, you know, Zach was presumed dead that whole time, and Kendall is in scenes with that fine-ass man, and she didn't even let him get to do second base.
He didn't even have a chance to say, I'm so excited.
This time around, you have him there. I'm sorry, I know Dixie Cooney. I have been watching this show longer than I've been watching General Hospital. I've been watching this show since 1989, thereabouts, and Dixie Cooney ain't never went this long without no man. Tad would have just been shit out of luck being out on a case that long, because Dixie's hot box, look, in the country where Dixie grew up on the farm.
Pigeon Holler.
You know, at Pigeon Holler, she liked to get made to holler. So you gonna tell me Grandma Dixie didn't want to look at Jordy Villasuso and be like, look at here, Tad been on that case a long time. And what has Tad been on that has had him?
Is he in the sex trafficking? Are they pimping Tad? Like, what's going on?
That could explain his absence.
What I would have done. I don't know why these shows feel the need to do this. I would have done, okay, fine. He's on a case. And then I would have had Dixie find out from Colby when she came to town. Oh, I saw Tad. He was having lunch with my mom when I was in Paris. And Dixie was like, what? And then she find out off screen that Tad and Eliza are hooked up again. She have a devastating cry, and then she go get the screw Griff.
Yeah, like Jordy Villasuso's character Griff and Dixie and Griff are mad at David's ass. And they just start talking about David and plotting, and they start to hunch it.
Plane is so hot. I mean, she looks better to me.
She hasn't looked this good since Rosanna Cabot.
Which incarnation?
The first Rosanna Cabot. Not the second.
Her first time as Rosanna, because it was a Rosanna before her, Yvonne Perry. But her first time as Rosanna when she was, you know, had that.
Oh, my God. It is that is my all-time favorite,
you know,
period of Katie McClain.
Great. She looks great, you know, and why did they not have getting a romantic story. Brooke is getting some flirtation from Dimitri, but Dixie is just kind of, and that new doctor, I'm like, mm-mm.
I told you, he's a no-name, no-interest doctor.
I just want Angie and David to play doctor.
Ryan Biddle was an amazing addition as JR. I have to say,
I'm only finally warming up to him now.
I prefer him because I love Jacob Young, but
Jacob Young is a way better JR, but I'm accepting Ryan Biddle now. It took this entire time.
Well, if JR was there and would have had, if Jacob Young would have been there and they would have had Eric Nelson there, I would need a hearing aid right about now. Because whereas Ryan plays it like JR is like, calm down, son. You know, Jacob Young can do that. Also, disappears too.
In absence of David Canary, Jacob Young might have helped this boy actually be a little bit grounded.
No, he wouldn't. You go back and watch. No, he wouldn't. Jacob Young ground somebody on that show. He would have been like, "Stop that, boy! You stop that too, Daddy." Then they'd fly into the air. What are you talking
about? Well, let's talk about someone else who's flying into the air. And that is Hope Logan on The Bold and the Beautiful, who's getting all hot to trot over the fact that Liam is jealous of Wyatt kissing her. It was some of the crappiest stuff I watched all week.
What the hell? Why are you going ham on B&B?
It was just sad. After everything that we have watched, Hope go through, where she's supposedly this little, like...
She was like, Hope also reuniting family, ain't she?
She goes, I sort of like this jealousy thing. And it's like, you almost, I mean, it was almost visually watching her get wet. I mean, it was like, come on. Jamie, what did you think of the triangle?
I was cheering Hope on because Hope has every single freaking right to be tickled by it. Because after, how long has that damn story been going? 2 years, ever since he rescued that whore. When she was drowning in that bathtub, my girl has had to fight for that fickle penis. And I am so glad that now she is like, I got two dudes fighting over me.
Because it will show Liam how she felt, how he dealt with both she and Steffi. I would love for Liam
and all that. My brother, you're doing my
bitch, that was my stepsister. Get your ass down somewhere.
Get your life. I'm so glad that she is doing that to him. And I loved when Wyatt is an insta air. When that boy, he was like, get out of my house. And Wyatt is like, it's dad's house. Hey.
And what did you guys think of the fact that Wyatt was, I don't know, I don't know exactly what they were trying to imply, but Wyatt going after Liam for his tofu burgers and everything right away was like...
Because Wyatt is a man's man. He drinks...
And supposedly Liam hasn't been all this time. I never got the impression that he wasn't.
Well, they've always made that. They've written that into the show, Luke. Dollar Bill does not like that he eats tofu burgers and that he's kind of wimpy. I mean, remember, Scott Clifton won the Emmy for how Dollar Bill ho-checked him for being a pussy after his wedding. Yeah, they've had that the whole time.
Well, I know. They've always written him as, like, a little bit willed when it comes to the women in his life.
Dollar Bill, he's always, you're a Spencer, act like a man. Dollar Bill is an alpha male, and Liam wants to sit around and sing Kumbaya and put flowers in Steffi's hair and Hope's hair. He's always wanted him to be a man, and now you've got Wyatt, who's like, I swing my dick in the forest, take a shower out. Yeah!
Remember when he was after Hope, and I think Dollar Bill was just like, when she was like, I don't want you touching my drawers with your filthy paws, and Bill was like, boy, rip them drawers up. So this is in the realm of that. They're writing Wyatt more to be like Dollar Bill. Like, he should have been named William Spencer III.
They're rewriting. I mean, I love you, Brad, but I got to put it out there because it's so the truth. He's redoing what he already did with Massimo Ridge and Nick Maroney. Because if you recall, What was Nick Maroney's favorite thing to Kyle Ridge? The dressmaker. I mean, it's basically the same storyline, but a new, you know, it's that Bell thing. Let's do what we already did that worked, and let's make it better. Half brothers, one's a little frou-frou, one's a man's man. They both are in love with the same woman who happens to be a blonde named Logan. Renee Sofer is Jackie M without the British accent, and
oh, that's true.
I mean, it's the same.
No young buck, though. Thank the Lord.
What did you guys think of Caroline, Rick, and Maya this last week, Jillian?
I mean, I just find it just like, really, Rick? Come on now, like him flipping. Like, I just don't. The storyline is cool because it started off, that's my gripe with that show. Their storyline started off really well, but then it started to get topsy-turvy. You know, in 5 seconds, she found out that he was a millionaire, and she just went, you lied to me. Then they worked it out. Then this girl, Caroline, became an uber bitch, which I love, but then Rick is alpha male. I don't like you kissing up on him in this role. It's like if I could see if it was a situation if they had a pass together, fine. But it's like, calm down, Rick. It's not letting you know.
Well, now he's about to lose that company, and Caroline is vowing to help him. You know,
and she wants what, a weekend with him or something like that.
Solid with Maya now, but the thing of it is, I love Caroline as the daffy comedic vixen, but I buy her helping save somebody's job running a major corporation as much as I buy Abby Newman running a division of.
Hey, if Brooke can do it, why can't Caroline?
Brooke is smart as hell. Brooke created Brooke's bedroom. Brooke created the belief.
Why couldn't Caroline do all those things? It's early in her tenure on this show.
The daffy little. She is not to be mentioned in the same breath as me and Tamar Braxton's favorite bone of the beautiful character, Brooke Logan Foster.
Thank you for the segue, Jamie.
Get your life took comparing her to Brooke Logan.
And
envision that if you were to ever have children, you would name one of them after your favorite B&B character, whether female or male.
Oh, I love you, Brooke, but
Tamar Braxton beat you to it.
No, Brooke, that's awesome. Tamar is a huge B&B stan. She told Sweetly. Well, she said that her husband's a big fan, and they watch the show together. They tape it every day, and they named the baby. They wanted the baby to have the initials LV. And then his last name is H, so I guess they're trying to be like the luxury brand. But yeah, I thought that was cute. I'm like, black people love their CBS soaps. Aretha Franklin loved The Young and the Restless. You know, Tamar and her sisters love Y&R and B&B. I think that is great. My child will be named Lucky Santangelo Giddens.
Ain't nobody naming their kid Taylor Sarah Smitty. Ain't nobody.
Look, so you know Smitty gonna name his baby. Look, you know he gonna name his baby Taylor Hayes Smitty.
Taylor Nikki. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, Nikki. It might be Nikki. I think his Nikki love trumps his Taylor love. Yeah, we love all our DC readers.
Yeah, back to this Caroline and Brooke thing, honey. It's been established that Brooke was a smart person when she first came on.
She was Caroline. Chemist. Bill Bell cared about people's careers. That's why it's so.
Caroline has not been established as smart. She's just been established as a conniving dumbass, a conniving daffy gal.
Smart, but she's not smart enough to finish the scheme up. Like, she's smart, but she's goofy. I mean,
Brooke, so no, sir.
She's more the new Sally than the new Brooke. But I am glad that they dusted Thorne off. Look, Thorne down there in the basement coughing his lungs up with mold exposure, you know, and asbestos. They dusted old Thorne off. Thank you. We love Wins Harmon. And Thorne is like, Daddy, you know, because Thorne got a Texas accent, even though they Daddy, I want the company again. And I'm like,
That storyline would be better if Ridge's kids, you know, keeping with the same pathos of Ridge and his offspring, even though they're not Forresters, always getting Eric's attention, Eric's love, i.e. the company. It would have been really better if Thorne and Rick teamed up and was like, we are blood Forresters. For Thorne to be like, I am Daddy's firstborn. I'm Daddy's firstborn. And for Rick to be like, I am his namesake. What the hell are these Maronis coming in here taking our company for, and for them to team up against Steffi and them? But I guess, you know.
Thorne is, yeah, he's teaming up with Dopey Adam. I mean, not Adam, that's the actor's name. What's his name?
Thomas.
Tom. Stephanie used to call him. Stephanie used to call him Tom. And I used to think, you just make him even sound slow, Tom. Like, you don't even know his name. I mean, now that's a waste of hunk, because they don't even do nothing with that boy. I'm like, now that's a role that could be recast, because he don't do nothing. You know, Thomas just, you know.
Jason Cook, come on over there, boy.
See, I don't even know if the casting will be it, though, because Brad Bell done cast everybody who ever been on Dancing with the Stars, and he don't write for more than 6 months.
Ian Ziering. Or Ian.
Don't nobody want Ian Ziering. Look, let me see.
Oh, except for Shock the Pussy. Get out of here. Now.
All the hair and plants they can for the cast, for Young and the Restless. They don't have no budget for Ian Ziering. No, let me stop.
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com, add us as a friend on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Later.
Bye, y'all.